Izzy makes a vow for Christina, Burke picks Derek as his best man, and Meredith blanks out. We'll have gossip on all that and more in today's official Grey's Anatomy podcast hosted by ABC.com. Well, the interns finally took their big test last night, and while we wait for the results, executive producers Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers join us once again to gab about everything from Christina's impending wedding to Adele's sudden collapse. Of course, this is all in preparation for next week's big season 3 finale entitled, Didn't We Almost Have It All? That episode airs Thursday, May 17th from 9 to 10 p.m. on ABC and is available the next day at abc.com. Here now are Shonda and Betsy.
Hi, this is Shonda Rhimes.
This is Betsy Beers.
Grey's Anatomy.
So we're kind of winding
down.
Or winding up, depending on...
We're gearing up.
Gearing up
for
to wind down.
Yes, we're gearing up to wind down for the end of the season.
Exactly, which is pretty exciting. And it's been kind of a long road. For us, but more importantly, for the characters.
It's been a road for these characters.
It certainly has. I think everybody's been through a fair amount, and I think, as of last night, actually been through a little more.
Yes. Frankly, it's been a bloodbath this season.
It actually, frankly, has.
Lots of people have died.
A lot of people have died, and a lot of people have been tested, I think, in incredibly profound ways.
Yes.
So let's talk about this episode.
Let's talk about this episode.
This is sort of the first... half of the season finale.
This is the first half of the season finale. It's I wouldn't say that we're doing a part one, part two thing, really, because that involves more cliffhanger-y kind of things, but I don't know how you get more cliffhanger than that.
Well, I was going to say, actually, in truth,
maybe I'm wrong.
Two massive hanging cliffy things. Maybe you could call it a hanging cliff adjacent or something.
Yes, but, exactly.
Because this episode ends with a couple of really amazing things.
Yeah, I mean, we've got...
One of my personal favorites, which is...
Adele on
the bathroom floor and Richard screaming at the top of his lungs. And not my favorite because of anything wrong. My favorite because it's such an incredibly dramatic, emotional moment.
Yeah.
And after
lovely.
All this time of these two people not being together, for their reunion
for
to be...
Based on her being pregnant with another man's child.
It's
pretty...
relatively... intense, and I have to compliment Addison for some fancy footwork in the hall.
Yes, exactly.
Actually, initially, where she did everything, but...
You don't want to see that all exposed.
No,
exactly. No parts thing.
That
yeah.
was pretty... That's what we like to call the gynecological excuse, when you have to come up with something as a gynecologist or an obstetrician.
Yes.
I think probably that's...
In general, you don't want to see that.
You don't want to see it. But also, how about those hikers?
Yeah, we were actually really excited about the hikers in the writer's room.
I think that's one of the best... most horrifying ideas, but most human ideas I've heard in a really, really long time.
Yeah. The idea that well, we can't tell you what happens, except that this, you know, the guys go hiking and the fourth one comes in with an ice axe in his brain is pretty cool.
It's pretty cool, but also the frostbite.
Yeah, all the frostbite, which was really gross to look at, but very cool.
It really absolutely was.
And is what happens to people when they're exposed to the elements. I've never really seen it on a show before.
You're absolutely right, which is also why I tend not to go anywhere without, a very warm car.
Yes.
It's like one way of doing it. But it was his fingers when they first revealed the hands.
Yeah, and they do look like gloves, and you realize those are so not gloves.
Absolutely.
It's pretty vile. The other cool thing is, you know, Burke choosing Derek to be his best man.
Which I think, although Richard was really a little disappointed,
Richard was kind of hoping that he was going to get the chance.
But, which is, I love that moment, actually, where he sort of puffs up a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
In anticipation of the big moment.
But I think that there's something really lovely about Burke and Derek having come from this very, to me, full circle place of really not liking each other in season one to season two, that moment when Burke won't allow Derek to call him by his first name. And then they go through the whole bomb episode together.
Absolutely.
And... have really ended up very good friends.
Even going through
the
difficulty of the tremor and the surgery, and Burke's feeling like he'd been betrayed, and Derek's feeling as though, in a very profound sense, he wasn't being appreciated for what he contributed.
Exactly.
They've worked through that. The hiking, they wanted to be friends. I mean,
the camping, the
whole thing. It's been...
They've been on a real journey together, and so I thought it was only fitting. Because the guy who was supposed to be the best man, if you really remember your Grey's Anatomy trivia, is the guy from season one who had an ovary inside him. But
Bill.
That was Bill.
Yep.
Bill had an ovary. But Bill, who had the ovary and the cheating wife, ended up not being able to come for story reasons.
Something probably to do with the ovary.
Yes.
Because that would be a story reason right there.
Exactly.
He could not attend due to ovary. Sorry.
That's our trivia about who the best man was. And so it's great that Derek is. And it was also great that we could sort of head towards this wedding in the way that we did with, you know, all this great medical ice axe to the head hikers with frostbite trauma going on.
Absolutely. But also that whole kind of idea of all the interdependency, which is starting to build up,
yes,
and which we've been feeling, but how dependent everybody is on each other, and that these hikers came in. Well, we weren't expecting the guy at the very end. That's what I was going to say about that.
But I mean, I think the greatest part of this was part of the point of the whole episode was the friendship, and the camaraderie between Derek and Burke, the wonderful way the interns sort of figure out how to rally around Meredith when she freaks out about the test, and that, frankly, for Meredith, has been coming for a long time. I mean, I think she brushed the fact that her mother died a little bit under the carpet, was very affected by Susan's death because it reminded her a lot of her mother's death. And then to have her father, who she'd finally sort of begun to have a relationship with, slap her in the previous episode, and then show up sort of roaring drunk in the middle of the hospital in this episode and tell her that he didn't want to see her at the funeral and basically blame her for her mother's, for his wife's death, mm-hmm. was, I mean, I always say, like, that Meredith, she can't catch a break.
Because actually, technically,
she
hasn't.
Yeah.
She drowned.
Yeah. There was some drowning. I mean,
there was some death experience.
I think it's pretty amazing that the girl's still standing. I mean, I felt that way about her as a character when we first met her in the very first episode of the pilot, and you saw that she had this mother with Alzheimer's. And now I think it's even more important to sort of point out that, dude, this girl has a reason to be a little bit miserable.
She's got a reason to be incredibly miserable, and I also just think it goes to what you were saying about the way that she deals with things is she pushes them down. She doesn't deal with it, and that I would even go so far as to say there are tons of things before we met her she's been pushing down.
Oh, yeah.
That are part of the things that contribute to the place she is now.
And the place she is with Derek, which is she's this person who sort of pushes people away when she wants them to be away and comes back when she wants them to come back because she doesn't have the ability to do anything else.
Well, and have them see her like that.
Yeah.
You know, that there's something so vulnerable about that. And since she's never been allowed to be vulnerable her entire life, her entire basis of sanity has been to hide that or walk away from it or say she doesn't need it.
Yeah. And the experience of being a surgical resident with all this high pressure and all of its sort of trials and tribulations has definitely pushed all that to the limit for her.
Exactly. And I also think in a weird way in real life, all this stuff does tend to happen in lumps very often.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly how things happen.
It's just you sort of feel like you've cut a break, or the more you bring stuff up, the more stuff actually happens at the same time. So she's really, I think, gone through a lot, but also is now for the first time ever really processing things in a real way.
Yeah, I love the moment when she's sitting there in the waiting room just frozen, totally freaked out that she didn't write anything on the test, really. And Christina sort of says, look, I don't know how to handle this. Meredith and I don't do this. We don't fail things. And they don't. They're not the girls who fail things. So for Meredith to be in this position where suddenly she couldn't even write her name on a test is to threaten sort of everything that she is.
And then when the chief goes to her and says, I'm giving you another chance, her first reaction, which I totally understand, is anger.
Yeah.
Because
stop trying to take care of me.
Stop A, trying to take care of me, B, don't acknowledge I failed because then I failed and then I have to do it again.
Yeah.
But by acknowledging I failed, then I failed.
Don't point out that I'm weak.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I love that scene too because he knows she can't accept it, so he just leaves it.
Yeah. And there's something really wonderful about that moment when she's, you know, it starts off with her saying to him, he comes to her to sort of try to be helpful, and she says, just because you slept with my mother doesn't make you my father, which is so mean, really, because, I mean, I always felt like the episode with Richard and Ellis, where Richard sort of builds for Ellis this idea of what their life would have been like had they been together. He would have been Meredith's de facto father. He would have been the only father she'd ever known. And so he feels this responsibility for her. And then in the end, to have him come to her with the test and the exam and say, do it again, and she looks at him and she says, you're not my father, is so heartbreaking because you could tell she kind of wishes that he was.
Absolutely.
I always think that if Richard were her father, Meredith would be a much more whole person.
Because Richard would have, she would have grown up, A, with a father, and B, a father with a strong sense of self.
Exactly.
You know, which he has. Because the amazing thing in that moment is he's such a relief because he's not needy. He's not needy. He just keeps giving.
Yes.
He does what a father would do, which is the kid has a tantrum. the father looks and says, you know what, I'm still going to take care of you, and I love you no matter what.
Yeah.
Which is a luxury she never had.
Ever in her entire life with any of these people that raised her.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, poor Meredith.
I know. But she's definitely strong and deserves a little tiny bit of a breakdown.
Well, and then you have Izzy, who is trying to find a way to keep George at Seattle Grace because she loves him and because he's her friend and because she can't imagine life without him. And so she stands there in front of him and basically tells them that their sex meant nothing.
Yeah.
And I love the moment she says, I know that you wanted it to mean something because it would mean that, you know, you didn't just do something terrible to Callie. It would have meant something. It would have been something bigger, but it didn't mean anything. And she walks away, and then you have that great scene where I think she's basically standing in the same linen closet she was after she and George had sex the first, you know, had that first
moment.
Encounter and sort of didn't talk about it afterwards. And she's devastated. And I love that she sort of sacrifices a piece of herself just so she can try to keep him there. And because it's that impossible situation that she has no business being in, and I think she realizes that.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a lot of infidelity on our show. I don't know if you noticed. But what I love about Izzy is that she...
We tried to keep it under wraps. But apparently some people have noticed.
There's a little bit
so
of
we're
infidelity.
Trying not to be as secretive about it now.
But what I love about Izzy is that she's a very... both Izzy and George have a very different moral code than almost anybody else in our hospital, in our world, and anybody else who's sort of been involved with somebody who's married. Izzy finds it profoundly disturbing that she has feelings for somebody who happens to be married, and George finds it profoundly disturbing that he's cheated. And in a way that, you know, Meredith had the excuse of she didn't know Derek was married when she started sleeping with him. Addison had the excuse of my marriage was falling apart. George and Izzy don't have that excuse, and they're both trying very hard to do sort of the right and moral thing. And I think they're going to start to find that harder and harder.
It certainly feels that way from that scene. But also you get so much of where Izzy's head is in terms of how much she longs for the purity of a legitimate relationship when she works with Christina.
Yeah.
I mean, which I love that moment of Christina not being able to figure out a way and postponing the whole vows and the whole idea.
Yeah.
And that Izzy in this burst says absolutely everything that she's feeling.
Yeah.
And
absolutely everything you'd want to, you know, that is romantic and is true and is the optimism of Izzy and is just enough to sort of point out to
exactly,
Callie.
Exactly what's going on. And then Meredith, in a desperate attempt to save the ball, jumps in and tries to identify it as all Denny-oriented, which...
which I love.
Which, Denny was lovable, so...
We said goodbye to Denny.
We said goodbye. Let Denny's go. Dead, but it's okay.
Denny's dead.
But I think that's a really... incredible moment, because despite what she said to George, despite every single promise she's making to herself, she can't change the fact that that's what a relationship should be, that's what she feels, and that's what she needs.
Yeah, and that's
what
she's missing.
Which I think is absolutely great. And this Christina wedding thing's pretty interesting.
I think it is.
It's really interesting.
I think that this is, I mean, what's good about this episode is that you sort of know that the wedding is coming, and you know that the stuff is coming, and it's coming up fast, and it's coming the next day, and Christina's sort of said, this is test day, and I will think about the wedding the day after test day, which is the wedding day, which is
by the way,
Christina.
It's so Christina, because the planning there.
Well, it's sort of like
pretty awesome.
I can't parcel out a piece of my brain for this right now. I can parcel out a piece of my brain for this on the day of the wedding, and I'll think about it then. Part of that's a little disturbing, because, I mean, many a woman is excited to get married.
Yes, many a woman is.
Many a woman
many
is.
Many women actually are.
Yes. I would not be one of those women, but many women are very excited to get married.
Very, very excited
and
to get married.
And that's not true either. I mean, I have to say that planning Christina's and Burke's wedding was a little disturbing, because it was a little bit like planning your own fantasy wedding, because I got to sort of say the bridesmaid dresses look like
it's
this.
It's true, actually.
The flowers are going to look like
this. I'm going to actually call you on this, because, I think the whole planning of the wedding thing,
I went all girly.
You became very, 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 very invested. As a matter of fact, I don't think you've been quite as invested since the prom.
Since the prom, in which I was like, every dress must be chosen by me.
Absolutely. And although Shonda is involved in, obviously, every aspect of Grey's Anatomy, she took a very special, particular interest in both prom decorations, wedding decorations, and what people were wearing,
on their
backs.
It's
so
pretty great, actually.
It's actually pretty great. And I'm simply going to say, she has very good taste.
I just want to say, watch that wedding, and you'll see what my wedding would look like should I ever marry.
Which is pretty telling, and I think it's pretty gorgeous. So
that's
my personal opinion.
But really, I got it all out of my system.
Which is good, given the fact. Exactly. no funky hair headdresses or something
exactly.
really strange, which is good. You got it all out of your system, and now.
But I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens to Christina in the next episode when the wedding really comes down. And we don't do that thing where we end the season with everybody waiting breathlessly to see whether or not the bride will say, I do. We don't do that.
No,
we
that's really not our style. And I don't notice that we kill people we don't roll randomly that and without any warning. And
There will be plenty of things left up in the air. The marriage of Burke and Christina will not be one of them.
Correct.
I like to solve things.
Correct. And that's amazing amount of information, which is great. We're opening up just like flowers.
Just like flowers.
We're unbelievable. Just like spring flowers here. Just absolutely.
Addison
and the pregnant. It's Addison. See?
I love that Addison's sort of suddenly realizing that she's a woman who works with, she's a gynecologist who works with people who have babies and she can't have babies.
And that June is busting out all over.
Yeah, it's that sudden feeling that there are babies everywhere. And of course, it's her job, so of course there are babies everywhere.
And there have always been babies everywhere. But it's the first time she's noticed it.
Yeah.
But it's also, I love the idea that essentially, you know, geriatrics and 12-year-olds can have children according to her, which I think is really funny.
It was a really great snarky line.
It was a really great snarky line, but I really feel for her because so much of this to me is about how you deal with your dream.
Yeah.
You know, what your dream is and how you process it when your dream is not what you think it's going to be. And in every way, shape, and form, each one of these characters is going through this moment where this is not how they envisioned it.
Yeah.
But is this what they want, even though it isn't how they envisioned it?
And I really love Joan Walter. Because I feel like in a very human way that we all feel, Joe is not so sure. He wants a baby, and he's definitely not sure he wants twins.
No.
But Walter really does.
And he loves Walter.
And so he wants to give Walter what he wants.
Exactly.
They've been a good relationship. I've really enjoyed sort of watching that whole thing grow, because when we first met Joe, he was just the bartender, and then he was Joe and brought his boyfriend Walter to Thanksgiving. And then
great.
We took Joe and Walter camping.
And then, by the way, we stunned and concussed Joe.
Walter.
I mean, Walter.
Yes.
So,
because we like to injure everyone.
We do, apparently.
At least once.
Apparently, yes. As a part of a relationship here at Seattle Grace, it's great if someone slams you on the head with a rock.
But and now we've given Joe and Walter babies.
We're trying to give them Joe and Walter babies. And the main thing is that, this is the thing about Joe, because Joe takes care of people at the bar. You know Joe would make just an awesome dad.
Yeah.
Because he all he does all day long is make sure that people get in cabs. He pours liquids for them.
He cuts people off.
He cuts people off. He puts food in little bowls in the shape of nuts and stuff, and he gives them to them. And I think he's very nurturing in his own bar pouring way.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So I think he'd make a good dad, and I know he's insecure about it, but I think he'd actually take care of things pretty well.
But I think it's nice that Joe and Walter are making some progress in that area, because they've been talking about it for a while.
The other really huge thing to me is that Ava, as close a relationship in a lot of ways than Alex has ever had, a really close friend, they've shared a lot, literally has been hiding the fact that
she's
knows
remembered.
Who she is.
That was something that we really struggled with, because we wanted this idea that Ava's hidden who she is, but we didn't want Ava to have hidden who she is, you know, have actually had her memory all this time while they're busy operating on her brain and trying to help her and have her be lying.
Mm-hmm.
What we did like, though, is the idea that, you know, memories do come back spontaneously.
Phone.
And that she could remember who she is, and you feel like Alex is the only person in her life for her. She has no memories. He's everything to her right now. And she still doesn't tell him that she remembers, which I love.
Oh, yeah.
And I love when he says, I don't know who you are. And, of course, he knows exactly who she is, which is what's so lovely about everything.
Well, and as a guy who, last episode, when she said to him, what happened to make you like this? And he said, maybe I don't remember. It's a callback to me of that, which is they're both people
who
don't want to acknowledge who they are.
Yeah, they're damaged.
For different reasons. And also heartbreaking how terrified she must be, you know, in terms of everything that she's gone through. And once again, it's what are your expectations? Her expectations of getting her memory back were huge, but she didn't count on the fact the memory she got was not necessarily one that she particularly wanted.
And what was important to me was that those memories be the most mundane thing ever. I didn't want it to be like I have a husband who beat me with a stick when no one was looking.
Or secretly a serial killer and I found out.
I am a spy from, you know,
exactly.
Country X. Although, you know, she spoke all those languages. She could have been, I guess.
She could have swiped. I think there was a fair amount of expectation that she was some sort of Mata Hari.
What I really wanted was for her to get her memories back and for her to realize that she was a woman in a bad marriage. And it wasn't bad in a bad, dangerous way. It was bad in a...
It just wasn't very good.
Just not very good way.
Yeah.
And that's what she was running away from, and she's still not sure she wants to go back. And there's something about... She's created a personality for herself. She's Ava. And Ava's interesting. And Ava watches the Seattle Grace show. And Ava has Alex, who thinks she's fascinating. And then to discover that, you know, no, she's Rebecca Pope, and she lives with a guy who makes furniture, and it's not a very good marriage, was sad.
And I also think you have all these dreams for your child. You know, she calls him, he's a cute little kid, you know?
Yeah, he's cute.
He's a cute little kid, and she's hoping somewhere without a memory that whatever she's bringing to the baby is something huge, is something amazing, is something incredible. And what she's been led to believe from being Ava is that she's something incredible. And to wake up and feel that you're not
utterly
that,
ordinary.
I think was really, really hard for Alex, too.
The last thing I think we should talk about, well, there's two last things we should talk about, because one... got to be talked about. But the first last thing we should talk about is the race for chief resident, which, as you can tell, is coming. Stuff's happening.
Yeah, it's happening.
I love the moment when Bailey realizes that Callie is also running for chief resident. And how, because I love the moment when Mark says to her, how does it feel to be the chosen one? That's my favorite line. I said in the writer's room constantly. Like, he has to say exactly those words. And Bailey sort of waits until he leaves, and she says, feels pretty good. And she does expect to be the one who's chosen. And it never occurs to her that she really has any competition at all. And to suddenly realize that Callie is standing right beside her, this person that she's known, and that this woman is competition.
Absolutely.
And this woman has thrown her hat in the ring and has no problems with it, which is what I love about Callie. There's nothing catty about what she says or does.
No.
She's a good surgeon, and she deserves to throw her hat in the ring.
And she's always incredibly direct. And you figure that Bailey was told directly by the chief, just a tiny while ago, that you're going to have to get a bigger chair because your legs aren't long
enough. One day you're going to be chief.
And that expectation is huge, but also to realize that standing right next to her was somebody who's actually in a lot of ways and in very different ways equally qualified.
A formidable opponent. And I love that because I love that the little, you know, Bailey has a little bit of an arrogance, a surgeon's arrogance that I love. And to have it be a little undone in that moment was great.
And is... You see it with the interns, but you rarely see it other places.
Yeah.
And it's the sense of incredible pride she has in herself.
Yeah.
You see it, I think you see it most with Heal with Love, Sydney, sorry. I like to call her Heal with Love. With Sydney, she makes no bones about it. She's really obvious.
Yeah.
But with Callie, who's a worthy opponent, it's got no place.
But you want to be gracious, and you want to be mature, and you want to, you know what I mean? You don't want to.
Yeah. You don't want to be.
Get all angry.
Snitty.
Yeah, snitty.
Snitty and petty.
The final moment.
Yeah, okay, let's
talk
about this.
That I think we kind of have to talk about
is. Yeah, we got to talk about this.
Derek encountering a character who we called Girl in Bar.
Girl in Bar.
She's pretty girl in bar, right?
I thought she was really pretty.
I think she's very pretty.
It's very sparkly.
Very
sparkly.
Little spark.
She did. She's kind of a little spark light.
Did she worry you at home, people? Did you think to yourselves? She's a little sparkly. She has a little
sparkly.
Spark.
A little flirty.
Mm-hmm.
Flirty, sparkly.
Think you'll be seeing her again sometime?
I don't know. God, I'd love to.
She's sparkly.
She's very sparkly.
Mm-hmm. Shiny.
Yeah, she did. She looked good in the bar, too.
She did look good in the bar. But how telling is it that Derek meets another girl in a bar?
Okay.
I love the concept that when things are not going so well, Derek looks at the girls in the bar.
At the bachelor party.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's what's sort of like awesome.
And he says no, and he doesn't do a single thing wrong.
Nope. Perfect.
But he looks.
I love that moment.
I love that moment. And I think there's a real spark between the two of them, and it's an interesting encounter. And I love watching Derek's face of sort of maybe, you know, it is too bad because of what's going on with Meredith and him feeling very shut out of her life. I mean, this...
But still being loyal.
Still being loyal totally as best loyal. He can, but the fact that he didn't even know that she didn't write anything down on the test, that she didn't even come to him, that she didn't even think to come to him.
You have to be patient, you know? You have to be patient to put up with that. That's really hard when you're giving and
But also, he has his own insecurities. I mean, yes, he's McDreamy, but the man has his own insecurities that perhaps Meredith's going to leave him. And that's his worst fear. And I love that he is as insecure about all this as she is.
Absolutely.
Our next episode is called Didn't We Almost Have It All?
It is, and it actually technically also happens to be the season finale.
It is.
Which we're very excited about, and you'll see some things happen which are connected to the things you saw this week.
Yes, yes.
In an incredible way.
And you'll also see some wedding decorations.
You'll see some, by the way, wedding decorations. So that's a color you would use for bridesmaids,
do you
think?
Oh, yes.
Because I think that was a good
fine,
color.
Fine,
it's
color.
A nice color, and actually I thought it worked well on everybody. Mm-hmm. Which is
Here's
one
a
of
tip
the things.
For all of you at home.
Yeah.
When you're getting married. I'm suddenly Martha Stewart again, like I was
this,
before.
This is good. Okay, first we got it with the wrapping paper. Now we've got it with, like, colors.
Right. Bridesmaids' dresses are always wonderful, but people have different body types. So you put them in the same color, the same fabric, but in a dress that suits their body.
So just keep that in mind when you're watching, because very, very, very impressive. So if anything like a wedding, or also, by the way, if you're going to clothe a girl group,
yes,
you could use the same rule,
yes,
I think,
the
probably.
Same
so
rule.
For those of you who may not be interested in getting married, but might be interested in starting
a girl group.
Let's
see, now I think I'm starting.
Well, actually,
group.
We are. Yes. We might take it on the road.
Yeah.
As long as we can lip sync.
Exactly.
Not just sing.
No.
Because, boy, that would be really disastrous.
That would be unfortunate for
us. Okay, they're actually getting a hook and dragging us away from the microphones
yes.
now.
So we're going to stop talking. And
we're going to talk
we'll
to you next
have a
week,
lot more to say after you've seen next week. Because there will be no more secrets.
Yeah. None.
And we will just be, it'll be no holds barred, wild,
rare,
full out conversation.
Clean moment of, yes.
You won't believe the stuff we're going to
say. Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable.
This is Shonda Rhimes.
Betsy Beers.
Grey's Anatomy.
That's all the time we have for now. Join us again next time for more exclusive dish from the writers. In the meantime, you can get your Grey's fill at our website with everything from the writer's blog to streaming episodes in the new full episode player. Just go to abc.com. Didn't We Almost Have It All? Airs Thursday, May 17th from 9 to 10 p.m. only on ABC.